This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Blackbeard was a pirate. Most historians agree on that, but what sort of pirate was he? Enthusiastic or reluctant? Was he a bloodthirsty swashbuckler keen to murder and pillage? Or a pragmatic treasure hunter dispatched by colonial powers? Well, Disney would have us believe the former. The latest installment of the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise opens tomorrow with the addition of a Blackbeard character. He is a new villainous foil for Johnny Depp's Captain Jack Sparrow, and he's played with fearsome gusto by actor Ian McShane.
I need those chalices.
Shoot.
Save me the bother of the fall.
You will go. You will return. Or I will kill her.
You won't kill your own daughter.
Quartermaster. Give me 6 more pistols, remove the shot from all but 2, but do not tell me which 2.
Joining me in the studio is Kevin Duffus. He has a very different view of Blackbeard. Duffus is a filmmaker and historical researcher who has studied the last months of Blackbeard's life. He'll present his most recent findings on Saturday at a conference called Pirate Parlay on the Pamlico in Washington, North Carolina. But first, he is with us on The State of Things. Kevin Duffus, welcome. Good to have you here.
It's a great pleasure to be here.
Let's start with what scholars generally agree is known about Blackbeard. When did he live?
We know when Blackbeard died, which was in November of 1718, and some scholars have suggested that he might have been born in 1680, which would have made him about 38 years old. That would have been extremely old for a pirate at the time. The mean age of pirates is considered to be about 24, so he would have been considerably older than his shipmates. But he lived in the early 18th century.
How much time did he spend in colonial North Carolina?
Well, traditional history suggests that he only spent 6 months in colonial North Carolina. However, some historians have considered the possibility that he had been here before because of his familiarity with the waters. My research revealed that the majority of the men that he came to North Carolina with in the summer of 1718 were very likely the descendants or sons of landowners along the Pamlico River in the Bath area. So it seems that he was very familiar with the area, and then he had some interactions with the governor that suggested that the governor had some sense of responsibility for these men.
Well, tell us about that interaction with the governor.
Probably the most remarkable and suspicious bit of behavior on the part of North Carolina's Governor Charles Eden in 1718 is that he issued pardons to Blackbeard and his men on behalf of King George, which were illegal. Those pirates were ineligible for the pardon because they had committed acts of piracy outside the bounds of the king's act of grace. And by issuing these pardons, Governor Eden subjected himself to accusations that he himself was colluding and assisting pirates, the penalty for which, if he had been tried and convicted, was death by hanging. So it was a very serious business, and I find that traditional history has fallen short of considering this very unusual action on the part of the governor.
So by then, Blackbeard was a pirate. He was breaking the law, somebody's laws, and wanted by whom, and what was he pardoned from?
Well, England was about to declare war on Spain again after a few years of peace, and King George's Privy Council had advised him that he needed to somehow put a stop to this increasing numbers of piratical events in the Caribbean and in colonial America. So they decided to issue this act of forgiveness in an effort to recall these men and possibly to have them join the Royal Navy in this battle or fight against Spain. But the pardon was very specific about having to not commit any acts of piracy after a certain date. It happened to be January 6, 1718. Well, Blackbeard and his men had previously heard about the pardon. They knew it was in effect. In fact, they sailed past 4 other colonial governors, one in Antigua, one in Jamaica, the Bahamas, and even in Charleston, in order to get to North Carolina to surrender to Governor Eden. But they could have surrendered to any one of those governors. And along the way, they committed as many as 12 acts of piracy, which were not part of the deal. And the fact is, Governor Eden would have known about these things. They blockaded the port of Charleston just before arriving and wrecking the Queen Anne's Revenge in Beaufort Inlet. And that was sensational news. That actually made the colony's only newspaper at the time, the Boston Newsletter. So everyone was reading about it. They were aware of it. They knew that this pirate Blackbeard had committed these acts of piracy. But Governor Eden overlooked that for some reason.
He grants him the pardon. And it's interesting, too, to take one step back. The king in England is about to grant a pardon to pirates because he's going to hire them. He's going to hire these criminals. We need these guys on our side. And in fact, the British Empire was funded, really, by Sir Francis Drake, pirate to the Queen. So this stuff had been going on for a long time, this collusion with pirates. Now, the relationship between Blackbeard and the colonial governor in North Carolina, why would he grant this pardon? Why would he take this risk?
Well, the conclusion I came to was because very possibly he sent these men out to begin with. There, North Carolina was in 1715, the colony of North Carolina was on the brink of economic collapse. The colony had had a terrible war with the Tuscarora Indians. There had been drought and famine and yellow fever outbreaks. And it just so happened that at the same about a year after Governor Eden arrived to rule the colony, a large fleet of Spanish treasure ships wrecked on the coast of Florida and spilled what has been estimated in today's value, $350 million worth of gold and silver, which littered the beaches of Florida. And it's well documented in the colonial records and in England that just about every population center in colonial America dispatched young men to go to Florida to see if there was some way they could, you know, recover some of this gold and silver. Governor Spotswood of Virginia wrote to the king asking for permission to go salvage this. The governor of Jamaica, who was also a royal governor, didn't ask for permission. He sent a man named Henry Jennings to Florida and Jennings came back with something like 80,000 pieces of eight within just a few weeks. Well, this was a tremendous bonanza. In fact, it created a gold rush mentality in the West Indies and in colonial America. And it's my supposition that Blackbeard and his men set out not to be pirates, but to be beach scavengers and salvagers. By the time they got there, the Spanish had organized themselves and began to fight off all of these English salvagers. And so they had to find another way to make a living. And that's how I believe they became pirates.
So you think they may have been sent by the governor to do the salvage operation, which technically, even by the laws of that day, would have been illegal. It was Spanish. It was widely known to be Spanish gold. You're stealing it. But everybody's doing it. So the North Carolina governor sends these guys off. They go. They become pirates. And is it your supposition that he then is stuck with them? He's got to pardon them because they were off doing his bidding to begin with.
Correct. And also, they brought back to North Carolina a treasure that has been overlooked by historians all these years. The treasure was brought in on the Queen Anne's Revenge, and it was delivered to Bath in the summer of 1718. And it was the very thing that planters in eastern North Carolina needed at that time.
That and slaves. And that's the other discovery that you made.
Exactly. When Blackbeard wrecked the Queen Anne's Revenge in Beaufort Inlet, he tricked the majority of his pirate company, something like 350 men, and departed in a small sloop with, it's been reported in a deposition in a trial in Charleston, he left with 40 white men and 60 Africans. Well, historians have waxed lyrically about how racially diverse Blackbeard's crew was. Six of 10 of his crew members were black. But the fact is, 6 months later, when Blackbeard was killed at Ocracoke, he only had 5 blacks on his crew. So the question, of course, is what happened to the other 55 Africans? Well, the answer is that they were sold in Bath, which did not have a slave market. If you had been granted 400 acres of land by the governor or the king to establish a plantation, you had no labor force. How are you going to do anything with it? At this particular time, there were the white population of North Carolina was 6-1 over blacks compared to South Carolina, where blacks at this time outnumbered whites because North Carolina had no slave market. If you had a plantation, you'd have to travel to Williamsburg or to Charleston to purchase slaves. And so it just seems a little surprising that in the summer of 1718, Blackbeard and his pirates deliver to Bath the very thing that they need, which is a labor force.
Well, is this something they could have determined on their own, or do you think they were sent to do this? And did they steal those men and bring them to Bath?
Well, they did. Actually, when they captured the French ship La Concorde, and of course Blackbeard changed the name of the ship to Queen Anne's Revenge, they had collected some slaves. That was a French slaver that had just arrived from Africa. And along the way, they traded and gleaned and slaves from other ships. So they really had the best men, the strongest, fittest, healthiest men, and were able to deliver those to North Carolina.
And you have connected the dots through a character named Edward Moseley. Tell us about him.
Well, Edward Moseley was the Speaker of the House, of the lower house of the Assembly, and he was Governor Eden's political adversary. He was the leader of the opposing party, the Popular Party. And Edward Moseley had become very frustrated because North Carolina was controlled by the Lords Proprietors, who were nothing more than real estate investors who were trying to get as much out of their investment as possible without putting anything back into it. When North Carolina colonists had been attacked by Tuscarora Indians, as the same thing happened in South Carolina versus the Yamasee Indians, the settlers appealed to England, asking for help to the Lords Proprietors, and they sent nothing. And so there was a great deal of dissatisfaction. And so Edward Moseley thought that the solution, of course, was to somehow depose the Lords Proprietors in what would be considered a bloodless revolution, and to restore sovereignty to the King of England. And that was the effort. That was the whole purpose of capturing and killing Blackbeard, very similar to what happened in Abbottabad, Pakistan. It wasn't so much to vanquish public enemy number one, but to collect intelligence that might serve their purposes.
And what was that intelligence? What would he have found there? What did he find?
Well, interestingly enough, they didn't find what they were hoping to find, but they did find a single letter that had been sent from the governor's right-hand man, the council secretary, Tobias Knight, to Blackbeard, referring to him as my friend and saying, before you leave the colony, I know the governor would like to see you one more time. And so I hope you'll have a chance to come back up here to Bath because we would like to meet with you. And there's something I want to tell you that I can't put into writing. Well, that couldn't be anything but the fact that the king issued a new pardon, a second pardon, which would have absolved Blackbeard of everything. In fact, if Blackbeard had just been able to hunker down and mind his own business for 3 more weeks, he would have been eligible for this new extension to the pardon. Of course, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about him right now if that had been the case. But there was only one letter, and so the evidence proving that Governor Eden had been in collusion with pirates was not to be found. In fact, every single piece of paper, and there were numerous documents, there were two vice admiralty trials that awarded ownership of ships to Blackbeard and his crew. They transported casks of sugar to the governor in Bath, and so there were receipts for those. All of these pieces of paper disappeared in a 2-week span after Blackbeard was killed at Ogre.
Missing documents from the governor's office? That never happens.
Well,
Governor Eden. You
Eden,
said.
That's
Eden.
Right. It started with an E. Yeah, Governor Eden very smartly ordered these documents to be rounded up, and who knows what happened to them. I have been through the state archives and had the help of the state archivist, and we've not been able to find a single document that even proves that Blackbeard was here in the summer of 1718.
Well, do we know that Eden had them dispatched, or they just were never written? Maybe there is no connection.
Well, the reason why we know that there were these documents is that on 3 weeks after Blackbeard was killed, in fact, I think it was the day after Christmas, Edward Moseley, the Speaker of the lower house of the Assembly, took a group of men and barged into the house that contained all of the colony's records, the governor's correspondence, the official seal of the colony. They threw the occupant of the house out and then nailed the door shut from the inside and then proceeded to plunder the colony's records for 24 hours. A whole night passed, and when the sun came up the next morning, they pried the nails back out of the doors and came out empty-handed. Now, the question is, well, Moseley, this very respected attorney, would not have broken the law and burglarized the what was essentially the archives of the colony if he didn't have good reason to do so. But whatever it was he was looking for, he did not find. And as a result, of course, he was arrested. He was convicted and charged with sedition and burglary. And he lost his law license for 3 years, but eventually was restored.
So the big question, how many people did we think Blackbeard really killed?
Well, that's a great question. And the fact is, I've looked at all of the original documents, primary source records in the British archives. Blackbeard, unless he killed somebody on the day he was attacked at Ocracoke on November 22nd, 1718, he never killed a single person. He never assaulted any women that we know of, and he never made anybody walk the plank.
How many wives?
Well, that's I can't answer that. Saying that you married someone in 1718, I mean, that was a euphemism for, you know, sometimes just having...
Being with them.
Being with them, exactly.
Well, this has been illuminating. Kevin, thank you so much.
I've enjoyed it very much, too.
Kevin Duffus is going to deliver a presentation titled Bloodthirsty Pirates or Hapless Marionettes. That'll happen Saturday, part of a symposium, Pirate Parlay on the Pamlico, this weekend in Bath and Washington, North Carolina. You can get more information if you go to the web and look up BlackbeardSloopAdventure.com. Thanks for listening to The State of Things. We are at stateofthings.org. Follow us on Facebook as well. Our program is produced by Amber Nimix and Alex Granados. Galvin Wells is our intern. Robin Copley is the technical director. The managing editor is Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.